Hello, and welcome once again to the Let's Do a Crime podcast. I'm Ryan, he, him.
I'm Aiden, he, they.
And I have been working in emergency services for over 10 years, including law enforcement, but not as a police officer.
I've done many different jobs over the year, but the one thing that's consistent is I play video games semi-competitively. So I have a great wealth of knowledge on competitive gaming and a lot of nonsense knowledge on the rest of the world. This leads to some fun conversations.
So it's official. This is a gaming journalist podcast now.
No.
So here's a headline from the Associated Press from July of 2023. Pioneering hacker Kevin Mitnick, FBI wanted felon, turned security guru, dead at 59. So have you heard of Kevin
Okay.
Mitnick?
Probably like once or twice, and I probably read like half of an article and then got distracted and didn't finish reading said article. I have knowledge of hacking, but I can say my knowledge of like hacking communities and hacking groups is pretty much at the same level as like your aunt. You know what I mean? Like I'm pretty much two steps above like the hacker 4chan when it comes to like hacker names and like groups. Like I knew of the like Lulzsec and Anonymous stuff when that was in the news cycles, but I unironically know more about pen testing and vulnerability and like
Which I mean
backdoors,
is kind of
ports. I know
where that's all
much more
going
about
now
all
anyway,
that.
too.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot less, as anything involves and becomes more interconnected, it becomes less about the figureheads and more about the common knowledge. Absolutely. But I find it funny that I now I think about it, I know very little about big names in the hacking part of cyber criminals. I know a lot more thanks to my crippling addiction to YouTube about more like interesting, I would say, cyber criminals, you know, people who do nasty crimes, right?
Yeah. So I do have a little bit of cred here. So
Right.
I used to work in computer security briefly in the late aughts. I don't consider myself an expert in computer security, that like I kind of ended up there, but it was a long time ago, and my education is in a it's a 2-year computer networking certificate. So like I was kind
Nice.
of underqualified, but I ended up in the group anyway. As a teenager, I used to hang out with a group called Hack Canada, which was like one of the big groups here in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Right.
I did help them write some articles and like fucked around with them, but I very much was not a core member of the group.
Did you end up hacking Canada, like the name suggests?
We in fact did hack all of Canada, the
Okay.
entirety of Canada.
I just wanted to make sure because that's a pretty lofty name to have
Oh,
to not
their
back
logo's
up.
fantastic. It's a chainsaw that says Hack Canada on the side, and the chain, instead of like being chain, it's just ones and zeros.
That's actually pretty sick. That
Yeah.
sounds pretty sick.
So, Kevin Mitnick is an almost mythological figure in the hacking community. In the 90s and in the early 2000s, so like well before all Lulzsec stuff or whatever, he was kind of a household name for anyone in the computer security world, due to a very high profile run from authorities and an equally high profile campaign for his release. So for a while he was the prototypical hacker. Like
Okay.
he pretty much fit all the stereotypes of hackers that people had in like the 90s. The average person might have heard of him, barely. He fit the profile of like a geeky but rebellious intelligent loner type. But I mean, how accurate is that really? So
I mean, I think that became less accurate as the years went on for sure. I think just due to the accessibility of computing power as it increased, it's, you know, not as much of a. Obviously, you need to stay like relatively inside to be using a computer for longer than like 30 minutes, but overall, I mean, I guess your question's rhetorical, but I
Yeah.
think it's important to answer because that stereotype, I think, is that is what's really funny about it is, when you look at the actual demographics of well, I guess I would call them cyber criminals, whether or not their intentions are malicious or they're, you know, white cap or sorry, white hat, black hat, whatever. It's funny, a lot of them are either under the age of 18 or they're like dads with beards, is what I've noticed personally.
Yeah, I think a big thing though is the internet, because like in early hacker culture, like if you go back to like the early 90s, yeah, the internet was around, but it wasn't like we're used to now. You kind of had to know where to find things. Search engines weren't really a thing yet. You had chat in the form of like Usenet groups and stuff, but again, those were right. There was kind of a technological bar to entry. And mm-hmm. these days, like everyone is so computer literate that it's a lot easier to get into it. So like, you know, even if you're a reasonably intelligent person who's like motivated to like do computer stuff, at the time you kind of had to stumble into like step one. Like you had to stumble into someone who knew what they're doing, or like mm-hmm. find your way onto a bulletin board or something. Whereas these days, like you can literally just search it up. So I think that there's like a better understanding about tech now, whereas back then it was almost considered magic to the general public.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, so. Especially as UI develops to be more, I would say, like, and I don't think this is a bad thing. I think this is a good thing. Like, you think about how we have like kids' toys, right? Where certain age groups get certain materials and like certain designs allocated to them.
Yeah.
Right. So younger children can only have things that are like hard or soft plastic, nothing that detaches into small parts, right? Nothing that can like break off and like be sharp, right? So on and so forth. And then as you get older, you know, you get to now play with Lego, you get to play with complex action figures, you can play with trading cards, books with paper pages. But with technology, we seem to started from the opposite and then worked backwards, right? So you at first you had like, okay, here's your terminal, right? You have full access to do whatever you like. And then as UI evolved and technology evolved, they're like, okay, we're going to like make everything pretty and shiny and like let your let your brain click the flashing squares for you, because we know you can't remember what to type into the enter line. Right, for the terminal, right? It's the reason why people don't learn Linux, is because you have to like type things into a terminal or a console, and it drives people fucking crazy.
Well, I mean, even the UI thing, right? Like back then, yeah, you had no choice. You had to go through terminals mm-hmm. like that, and of course terminals don't hold your hand. You need to know how. Like, it's almost like coding. It's not, don't get mad at me, coders, it's not coding, but like,
no,
you have to know how to put things in the right syntax and like how to yes. send instructions to the machine, and like that is still the most powerful way to interact with the machine. But to learn about it is really hard when that's all you have. Like mm-hmm. if you have a nice UI, like even if you're using Linux these days, you usually have a nice desktop UI. Well, you can bring mm-hmm. up a web browser and like do a Google search, and then like, you know, have another tab open with a terminal, and be like reading about what you're doing at the same time as you're doing it. So the bar to entry, even at the high level, is lower. Like,
right.
It's just that first step was so hard back then, is a lot easier now.
Yeah, I'd mostly agree. I think on the exact same token though, it's also just as hard as it was back then, because of obfuscation.
Yeah. Right? But
continue for sure.
From that period of time, like, I recall both, like, I'm older than you, so I have a little bit of earlier memory of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I recall both the hysteria and both the sort of mysticism around hackers. So like it was,
yes,
like people
kind of, I remember that as well. Yes.
Yeah. We have it a bit today, but it was like, it went to absolutely absurd levels at the time. People had very little understanding of computers and thought hackers could basically do anything, and were either in awe of them or completely terrified of them.
So honestly, just from my last, I used to work for a telecom company,
yeah.
right? And I would go door to door. So I had a lot of conversations with people about technology. Believe me, there is still a gripping fear of hackers, mostly due to smart home technology and cameras. That is like the new scare, right? No matter what you tell them, they are still scared, which I find almost ironically funny, because people experience the Zoom hacks, right? They weren't really hacks. A lot of it was brute force or social engineering, right? Where someone gets access to a Zoom link or just inputs random, like what I mean by brute force, they input random codes, and someone who didn't lock their join, you have like dumb kids with microphones, right? Jumping in a call and screaming whatever they want,
yeah,
right? During your work call. You know, and then there was the people using unsecured networks to route to your smart home devices and be creepy as fuck on a baby monitor, right? So you had those as well. So you combine those two. I'm talking to a homeowner who is scared that if they install a doorbell camera, someone's going to hack into their doorbell camera and like get their information or something, or like record them or what have you. And that's like the latter, like the, what I would say is, the consequence is a very real fear. It's a valid fear. Like I can understand not wanting your information compromised and not wanting your personal home recorded for malicious reasons. It's a very valid thing to become scared about, but it's also very weird having these conversations with people where I'm like, you do understand for that to happen, you either have to like go in and make that available to happen. Right, because now all routers are installed with techs, and the technicians will also install the cameras. But a lot of these cameras have software where it's like the amount of encryption and the amount of access you would need to get into those cameras without ever stepping foot in your home is so insane that this person should go and instead hack your bank account at that rate, right? So, like the amount of like sophistication required. So yeah, people are still scared. But it's just scared about new things. They're not as scared as their like home computer being hacked. They're not scared of their smart cameras being hacked. So it's kind of the same.
I will say I'm a little bit on like the tech fear people side when it comes to like home automation. Like I won't do home automation, but it's like you're right when it comes to like a random person trying to access your shit.
Yes. And I know where you're going with this, because I'm not scared of a random person. I'm scared of the people who installed it and where the, like, because that goes back because they install it on cloud servers. I totally agree with that.
Or
for sure.
Someone who already knows a bunch about you, like someone who already knows you or is stalking you or whatever, mm-hmm. could potentially have enough information generally to get past some of those security features.
Absolutely.
And I am not a lawyer. And don't take your advice from a podcast for law stuff, but a bigger threat today I think is actually state actors. So say if you have like a Nest camera installed, right? And that has like the cloud storage option, cloud like control option. I am like local like police, right, and I'm doing an investigation on you, like, normally, to get access to your camera footage, I'd have to get a warrant to search your cameras, right?
Or a subpoena, yeah.
Yeah, but because it's on the cloud, I can now give that warrant to Nest instead and get the information from them without you ever knowing.
Right.
Or even worse, because the fact that some of this information isn't actually protected by any really strong laws, there have been cases now where companies are just cooperating with law enforcement and providing information without a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of stuff that I see as more of a threat to the average person, these like the kind of the sidestepping of civil rights. Like,
absolutely.
So like, I also am not a fan of cloud home automation because of that.
Right. Like, I absolutely agree.
If it's not on your computer, it's on someone else's computer. If it's on someone else's computer, they have
it's
control.
Not safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Yes, back then people thought that like hackers could like cause your computer light on fire or like launch nukes.
Right.
And a lot of people just had this general notion that hackers were malevolent geniuses just waiting in the shadows to wreak havoc on people.
True.
And the problem is,
which is true,
because the fact this was still like kind of a niche thing, there wasn't a lot of knowledge in like officials kind of thing. So like,
okay.
Oh, like these days, like in law enforcement, we have people like myself who have a background in this. And so whenever a case like this will come up, it gets run past people who do know a bit more about it. But back then, that just wasn't the thing, right? So even like judges and lawyers and police also kind of were just the general public in terms of this stuff. So this is the sociopolitical climate that our story takes place in.
Okay.
So, you know, what is a hacker? Great question. Yeah. There have been lots of attempts to define what a hacker is. I would say my definition would be that anyone who seeks an intimate understanding of a technical system and pushes its boundaries, whether that be good or bad, would count as a hacker. So most good IT professionals, I would say, count as a hacker.
I've kind of always summed it up as an unauthorized access.
Yeah, well, it's not always unauthorized either, because like if you're doing penetration testing, like you might be breaking systems, but you're doing it for like you have permission to do it, right?
Right.
Or even like I knew a guy who would hack cell phones. Like he wasn't like breaking into anything. He was just like oh, I've got these two cell phones here with two different numbers on them, because back then, before SIM cards, your number was baked on the phone.
Right.
And so he'd find ways to like mess with them so they could both be the same on the same number, or like switch them back and forth, or like just kind of pushing the boundaries of what the system will let him do. You know, and absolutely, even though it didn't affect anyone other than him because they're his phones, right?
Okay.
You touched on a little bit earlier that people try to give labels like white hat or black hat for like ethical or unethical. But I think largely the term hacker itself should be considered neutral. For sure. It's just someone who likes to tinker and push boundaries. So back to our main boy, Kevin Mitnick. Most of the stories around him revolve from his run from authorities and arrest in the 90s, but he was always very messing with various systems. A 1995 Wired article claims that when he was 12, he reverse-engineered a bus punch card system to get free rides by punching his own cards.
Right, I've heard about that.
Yeah. So basically, he just figured out like where to get like a hole punch from that matched what the buses used, and figured out how to make his own bus cards. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, in 1979, at the age of 16, he was able to access computer systems of the Digital Equipment Corporation, or DEC, and copied some of their software, which was an operating system they were working on. So, most of the articles talking about this say he broke in, which is true in the sense that he got in without permission. But what he did was what today is called social engineering, which is much more common for like an unethical hack than someone like typing a bunch of code and breaking through the encryption.
Right, and it's still the most dangerous form to this day.
Yeah. So what he did is he phoned the IT department, posing as an employee, and was able to convince them to simply give him the password. Which
by being a problem user, nice.
Yeah. So this is how a lot of system intrusion still happens to this day. Someone who's fast talking and confident getting information they shouldn't have out of an employee. So like one thing we did when I was doing IT security is sometimes we would phone our own help desk posing as a user, and see if we could trick the help desk into giving us information that they shouldn't be releasing. Because like, you know, even though I might not do anything that time, like say if I can be like, oh yeah, like I forgot which address I put in the system, can you let me know which address is in there? Oh yeah, okay, it's that one. Yeah, I remember now, thank you. Then I call the help desk next time. Now I have more information that I can use to convince that person that I am who I say I am, and get more information from them, and eventually get to a point where I can have everything, right? That's what he was doing. So, naturally, Mitnick bragged about this to his friends, and someone reported this to DEC. He was arrested, and in 1988, at the age of 25, he was convicted and sentenced to 12 months in prison. He previously had run-ins with the law, but most of these he was under 18, and computer crime wasn't really well regulated at the time, so he didn't face very many consequences, mostly just probation. I did find a reference to a stay in a juvenile detention facility, and apparently he just walked into a Pacific Bell telephone company location and walked out with some of their manuals. Which, I mean, like, that's pretty ballsy. Just walk in, pick some stuff up, walk out. No one questions you.
Some busy office environments, you could 100% get away with that.
Oh, there are tons of places you could get away with that. That's just ballsy because, like, at the time, computer crime wasn't really well regulated, so they didn't really know how to charge you. But, like, you know, if you walk in and steal a bunch of manuals, like, okay, theft's a pretty easy one to slap you with at that point.
Right.
So, when he was convicted, there was a lot of paranoia around him. So, Initially, he was forbidden any phone access. Authorities believed he could hack computer systems or even launch nuclear weapons by whistling if he was able to use a phone. So, this sounds absurd, but at the time it was...
What, Hedwig's gonna go and, like, log into a terminal for him if he whistles the right way? Like, what? Yeah,
this is super absurd now, and it was absurd at the time, but there is, like, a grain of truth there, because at the time it was possible to dial a phone or to make free long-distance phone calls or do other weird things with the phone network if you could whistle really precise tones. So, like...
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, so, like, when... You know that the tones you get when you dial on a keypad, like the doo-doo?
Absolutely.
The reason why those tones are like that is because it's not so important these days because everything's digital now. But at the time, the phone system would use those tones to figure out what you had pushed. So that's why it would play those sounds. And
so he was like manually inputting inputs.
Yeah, and so there's also a tone called... there's a magazine called 2600 Magazine. And the reason why 2600 is what it's called is because a 2600 hertz tone, if played into a landline at the time, would open up a long-distance trunk and let you make a long-distance phone call. So if you could play that sound into the phone line, you could make that call for free. And so, like, and some people could train themselves to whistle at that perfect frequency. So this kind of thing, launching nukes is completely absurd, but, like, messing with the phone system in some way by whistling was actually a thing. So...
Okay.
Yeah, the court did eventually relent and let him speak to his lawyer and his mother on the phone, but only with supervision. So, out of the year he spent in prison, 8 months was spent in solitary confinement. So, like, this is a non-violent criminal, right? Like, he's broken a law, sure, but, like, he hasn't committed violence to anyone, he hasn't threatened anyone, like, no one's really in danger from him, and he's thrown into solitary confinement for 8 months, because they were that afraid of him.
Okay.
Yeah. So, he was released on a 3-year probation, and in 1992, near the end of his probation, he was accused of violating it by unlawfully accessing a Pacific Bell voicemail system. And a warrant was issued for his arrest. So he went on the run at this time. According to a 2600 magazine documentary called Freedom Downtime, he went on the run because he could not handle the idea of being in solitary confinement again. However, in more recent interviews, Mitnick also stated it was a sort of addiction to putting himself in high-risk situations, like an adrenaline junkie sort of thing.
All right.
And so he would put himself in places where he was close to being caught and then work his way out of them. Now, granted, this is a very recent interview, so this might be a little bit of mythologizing himself, but that's what he said. So,
okay.
During his flight from the law, he bounced around the U.S. Using fake identities to get employment and housing. He masked his trail by using cloned cell phones. So, like I talked about before, that guy I knew who would mess with his phones. Cloning is one thing where, like, you would copy a phone to make it look on the network identical to another phone. And so that's one thing he would do to kind of mask his trail. During this time, Mitnick claimed he was able to monitor the cell phones of the FBI agents so closely that he knew where they were and was able to evade them. He claimed that one time he knew they would be executing a search warrant for his apartment. So after cleaning out his apartment, he left a box of donuts for them to find. It's unknown if the donut story was true, but the FBI did confirm that Mitnick at one point was able to monitor their cell phones, and it's been speculated that he may have used information obtained by monitoring them to help him make fake IDs. So, like, he would monitor their cell phones, and if they, like, were running a person, like, through their system over the phone, he would copy that person's information down and, like, fake their identity. Yeah, right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said right. Like, it's very similar to the Catch Me If You Can guy.
Yeah, it's similar situation. Mm-hmm. So, one of the fake identities he took was Eric Weiss, which was the real name of Houdini. So I thought that was pretty cheeky. Yeah. In February of 1995, though, he was arrested in Raleigh, North Carolina. The story goes that he intruded on the systems of a computer security expert at Sun Microsystems, a man named Susomu Shimamura. who then assisted the FBI and was instrumental in his capture. Personally, like, you know, I was, I'm kind of aware of this investigation. Like, I was a little too young to have been seeing it live, but like, through some of the stuff that happens later, like a lot of this investigation became public knowledge.
Right.
I think Shimomura embellished his involvement a lot and really hyped himself up, but he was involved at some point in the eventual takedown. So what he did is he assisted the FBI to correlate Kevin Mitnick's web traffic with his cell phone activity and used a cell spectrum analyzer to get a rough estimate of his where his apartment was. So personally, I think the FBI was on him pretty close already, because they got a warrant for his previous apartment while he was still living there. But doing this probably managed to help get the drop on him so they could serve the warrant before he had time to react. And this is not where his story ends, though. After his arrest, prosecutors initially continued their hysteria, and at one point he was facing over 400 years in prison, as well as $300 million in damages.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah, he could definitely pay that off. Like, what's the
Yeah. Well,
point?
and he
Around like
was.
$3.
Well, the point was to keep him in prison forever, basically.
Right, of course.
He was moved around between maximum security prisons before even having a trial. So like he was being kept in the kind of facilities you would keep like the most dangerous offenders, like the Unabomber and like, you know, mass murderers and shit like that. And this nerd is being kept in that environment. Yeah, they kept moving around, and part of this is because there was a campaign to have him released. So they moved him around a lot to limit his ability to contact the outside world or like get outside support. So in the late 90s, Free Kevin became like a frequent slogan in the hacker world,
Amazing.
including various forms of protest, from traditional marching in front of government offices to hacking into facing websites that were related to his arrest, and protesting a movie based on Shimomura's book, Takedown. The book and the movie portrayed Mitnick as being a violent con artist. And
Okay.
keeping in mind, this movie was being made before Mitnick even had a trial. So it undoubtedly would taint his chances at a fair trial.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's actually really funny because one of the protest hacks was Miramax was producing the film, and people hacked into Miramax website, and instead like made a very like it looked almost like an official page, but it was like talking about like how hey yeah we're gonna make tons of money off of smearing someone's name. Like look at this, isn't this great? Now, most articles talking about Kevin Mitnick leave out a very important detail. He was never given a trial. He ended up making a plea deal in 1999 before ever being brought to trial. In the aforementioned Freedom Downtime documentary, it speculates that he made the plea deal to avoid being in prison with no trial forever. So the only
Right.
trial he ended up getting was a sentencing hearing. So, like, yeah, they just bounced him around to prisons for years and years and years and didn't give him a trial until he pled guilty. Yeah. He did not get hundreds of years in jail and millions in damages, though.
I hope not.
There was never any evidence that he had actually profited directly from any of his computer crimes. Like, even when he was on the run living under his fake IDs, he was getting jobs and, like, working regular jobs. None of his victims could show that he had actually done any quantifiable damage to them. Most of the damage claims really had no basis in anything, and some of his alleged crimes were found to have little or no evidence. So, like, one of the big ones was copying, like, source code from Sun Microsystems, which he did do,
Right.
but he didn't do anything with it. So,
He just like had it on a
yeah, so he just
napkin.
had it. So, like, there really wasn't any damage.
Was neat.
Yeah. So, in the end, there was still enough solid evidence of crimes to secure conviction. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison, most of which he'd already served before pleading guilty. So, like, one thing about the legal system people don't get is that like normally before your trial you're released to like handle your shit, but if you're
Right.
considered to be too dangerous to release or like you're a flight risk, then they'll hold you in prison until your trial. And if you get convicted, then all the time you spent in jail counts as part of your sentence served already. So in this case, he already spent most of that 5 years in jail before he even was convicted. He was fined several thousand dollars, but like not the millions. So You can actually pay it. He was released from prison in January 2000, but he was prohibited from using a computer or a cell phone until January 2003. That's a pretty common condition of computer crimes when you get released, is that you're prohibited from using a computer or a lot of times mobile devices, and you're restricted to like really basic like landline communication for a period of time. That's starting to be less of a thing now because it's so hard to like operate in modern society without internet access.
Right.
He went on to become a computer security consultant, and he ran his own computer security consulting business, which was quite successful. Also, he had the coolest business card ever that's illegal in Alberta.
Wait, why is it illegal?
So his business card was a small piece of stamped steel that like had like his name and contact information on it, but like cut out in the stamped steel were lockpicks you could punch out. And the reason why it's illegal in Alberta is because in Alberta, in order to possess lockpicks, you have to have a locksmith license. Which is very irritating because that's not a law in most places. Most places you can just have lockpicks. They're just bits of metal. Right. And I really want one of those business cards. He passed away.
If you want to go for the like illegal Alberta gambit, you also just make it, you just have a rat attached to your business card at the same
time. Just tape a Norwegian rat to your business card.
There you go.
And there, it's illegal in Alberta now. Alberta, weirdly right-wing, but yet things are legal here that are legal in the rest of the country.
It's beautiful.
He did pass away in July of 2023 after a bout with cancer. And apparently his wife was pregnant with his first child. I did not look up any info on his wife because she's not really part of the story, but Mitnick was 59. So, I kind of wonder how old his wife was.
All right, hey, listen, let him cook, you know? Like... Listen, if he's still, I don't want to get too raunchy on your podcast, but I think he could still get it going. So all yeah. power to him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be, you know, like in my late 70s with my like future child turning 18. That sounds very exhausting, right? Like imagine you're almost 60, right? Your child is born. And then you're 75 when they're 15 and they're like, fuck you, dad, right? I don't have to listen to you. I'm going to go do what I want, right? Yeah. And you're like 75. You're like, you have like a cane or like, you know, like you're like, you have like a bad hip, right?
You're pushing 80 by the time they graduate high school. Like,
yeah, you're sending them off to college while they're looking at colleges. You're looking at old folks' homes.
Or,
like,
or even worse, like you have a heart attack and die like days before the grad or something like that. Like,
Or, you know, you die from cancer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, kid's not born yet, so won't impact them too much, I hope.
Brutal.
But this case remains a staple in the hacker culture and has been extremely controversial from every angle. So, like, his treatment of authorities is a big one for me. Like,
right.
So, many at the time felt that, many in the hacker community at the time felt that because he didn't do tangible damage, that what he did shouldn't be considered a crime.
Okay.
I don't go that far because, like, he was, like, still breaking the systems, like, breaking people's voicemail. Like, you know, he could have done some real damage if he wanted to. But treating him like a dangerous superhuman criminal is really an extreme overreaction. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and was at best a violation of his civil rights. So, yeah, there's been much debate over, like, what kind of crimes he did or how good he was as a person or security expert. And... to me, that's kind of irrelevant. Like, lots of people in the hack community say he was really arrogant or, like, stuck up or whatever. But...
okay.
Yeah, but...
you that know, matters.
In terms of this case, that's not really relevant. He was not the only hacker to be treated like this through the 90s. It's just that he was the highest profile. There was a literal, like, witch hunt during this time where any computer crime was treated like the greatest threat humanity's ever seen. So, like, I remember one... other hacker named Bernie S. was a teenager when he was convicted, and because of his intelligence, he was convicted as an adult, and he was put in... this is a thing in the States that, like, to me should be illegal, but they aren't a thing here. It was basically put in, like, an outdoor prison camp.
Yes.
And, like, you know, had his ass beat by, like, fully grown adult, actual, like, violent criminal inmates.
Yeah.
And it's like...
yeah, people love to do the whole... forced labor camp Like, I think my favorite part about America is everyone in America complaining about things that exist in their own country and acting as if they're foreign, when the Americans likely either brought it over to said country or they also borrowed it from a different awful piece of shit place. And apparently all their citizens just don't know, because they have like shitty, they have some of the shittiest education publicly in the Western world. So like, people are like, oh, you know, these places have labor camps. It's like, yeah, you also have labor camps, you know, you also have all these terrible things that you pretend are from some other country that we ha that you guys had a war with, you know. This is
It's also one of those things where, like, most people never have any interaction with the justice system outside maybe getting a traffic ticket. So they really
No.
don't have any concept of how bad it can be.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Until you, like, either yourself are or know someone who is put through the system and, like, goes to the worst parts of it, then, like, you're like, wow, this is fucked. And so this is very much the case in the 90s, where, like, if you did anything, like, these days, yeah, there's still, like, it's still a crime to do a lot of intrusion in systems, but, like, it's not treated so harshly. It's sentenced normally. Like, you're not thrown in maximum security prison because, like, you hacked someone's Gmail account. Like, you're gonna get a more proportional sentence. And the general public understands it a little bit more, and there's kind of this understanding that, like, a hacker can also just be a computer security expert and not necessarily, like, tech a Hitler.
Yeah, I mean, what I find really funny was during the period we talked about where there was all the hysteria, you know, a hacker named 4chan. I was about, I want to say like 11, 12, 13, like roughly that age. And it was in magazines. And I remember it being in like a lo office lobby or whatever, like waiting for my mom at an appointment. And I read this article that talked about how there was this scary, shady website where hackers congregated and like did illegal activities. And me being a 12-year-old with like unfettered access to the internet with no supervision, the first thing I did when I went home was go on 4chan as a 12-year-old. And like, I didn't learn much about hacking, to be honest, because if anyone, you know, who's listening was on 4chan a decade ago, a lot of it was just absolute dog water crap. Like, it was just crap.
I
Like,
mean,
it
it
was just
still is.
posting random crap. Oh, I know it still is, but you know, it, with all the notoriety and stuff, it attracts people being obnoxious, right? So I think it was funny because back then it was just a lot of posing and pretending, and also just a lot of just random garbage, because that, you know, it was called the random board for a reason. Anyways, I'm getting beside my point. Eventually, I ended up on those forums and bulletin boards you're talking about, where they're restricted forums. You sign up for access, right? Go through the rules, and then people write guides on how to do things. So I remember one summer, I was really bored with my friend. So we set up an FTP server and tried to install malware on our friend's computer via sending him an email with an exe pretending it was a game he wanted to play. And then we wanted to keylog him so we could troll him on Facebook. So like, the information is there, but the reason I bring this up is that, you know, hackers aren't doing anything magical. They're relying on you being stupid
Yeah,
or they're relying on tricking you into doing something you shouldn't.
and what you
And that is
described there
still
is
the
like
crux of it all.
what you described there is like the main way malware like gets around these days. Like, the
Yeah.
user has done something that allowed it to happen, whether they know it or
Right.
not. Like, most malicious hacking these days is just about convincing people to do something dumb.
Absolutely.
But let me give you a little window into, like, what the hacker culture was at the time that I was involved, which is like age 14 to like 18.
Right.
One thing we did that was boring as hell, but, like, got us actually good information, was what we called war dialing, which is where you sit down with a phone and a list of numbers, usually just like the entire sequence, like 780111, like start at 0001 and then 0002, and you just dial every one of those numbers.
Okay.
And if a person picks up, you hang up. If you get a screech in your ear, that's a computer. You write that number down.
Right.
And you just continue through the whole 10,000 number set until you figured out which ones are computers. And then you come back later with the laptop and dial into that number and see what comes up. Sometimes it's just like a fax machine, in which case you scratch that number out. Sometimes it ends up being a computer, like a government system. And now you can start messing with that. Like, that's not rocket science. Anyone can do that, right?
Right.
Or, one time, my buddy moved into an apartment building that had a MIRCOM system. So, like, the front door access systems you see in a lot of buildings that has a little keypad where you dial a person and they can buzz you in. So, MIRCOM's one of the big brands that does that here, right? And we figured out pretty quickly that it's a small computer attached to a phone line. That's all it is.
Okay.
So, we sat there just messing with the keypad until we got into a maintenance screen. And then we figured out through trial and error that the maintenance password is 4 digits. Well, a 4-digit number, you know, only has around 10,000 possible combinations.
Exactly.
So just start dialing them, right? And eventually found one that worked. And then we could get into the system. And then from there, we could do things like open the door, like change people's numbers in there, or use it as a phone. So we were teenagers.
Which is magic. Yeah, to the outside world.
We were teenagers, so like we had no malicious intent. We didn't want to mess with people's numbers. We just wanted to see what we could do. And so once we're in, we're like, well, what do we do? Well, let's order pizza. So we ordered pizza from this fucking like front door security system. Like that's what hacker culture is like. Mm-hmm. You're pushing just to see if you can, and when you succeed, you're not like destroying stuff. You're like, oh, okay, well, like I guess I'll do something silly and move on to the next thing.
It's funny.
Do you have any like self advertisements, like your YouTube channel or anything like that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if people want to watch me be good at competitive Pokemon, I have a channel. It's called Paladin. You'll probably have to add the term Pokemon after, because currently my channel is quite small, so I'm dwarfed by some like a finance guru guy who's also by the name of Paladin. And then also, if you YouTube the term Paladin, you're going to find D&D content. As you can tell, I'm quite smart with my name choices. But I don't know, my views are picking up. I'm pretty good at competitive Pokemon. I'll be doing more broad Pokemon content in the future, if that's something you're interested in. If not, that's all good. That's all I really got cooking right now. But yeah, that's it from me.
And of course, if you have a story you want to send to me, you can email me at letsdoacrime@gmail.com. So it's all lowercase, all one word, no punctuation, just letsdoacrime@gmail.com. And until next time, don't break into Sun Microsystems voicemail systems and then go on a run from the FBI for 5 years.
Do keylog your friends so you can get into their social media accounts, though.
Okay, bye.
Bye.